B-O-T.
I'm Chris Paff. I'm your moderator. I run a consultancy, Chris Paff Tech Media LLC, that works with a wide range of early to mid-stage ventures, mostly from Europe. We do business development, marketing, PR, and investment consulting. And I've been around the AI space for quite a number of years, but this is now really something that's quite embedded in the media universe. And we have four amazing platform technology providers from around the globe here. And the way we're going to get started is I'm going to make quick introductions of the humans in front of you, and then they are going to speak to some content, because one of my mantras is show us, don't tell us. So we're going to go through sort of 3 to 4 minute presentations for each of the four panelists, and then we're going to dive into a really meaty conversation, and we will take a few questions at the end. To my left is Randa Minkara from Transform. Give it up for Randa. Come on. All the way from Seattle. To her left, all the way from London, is Romain Oud from Uteli. Give it up for Romain. And to his left is Aman Serene. He is the founder and CEO of Zip Media out of San Francisco, Fog City. Give it up for Aman.
Hey, guys.
And last but not least, to his left is Janne Nuvinen, who, when he's not on an airplane, can sometimes be found in Helsinki. And since today is the 101st birthday of Finland, let's give it up for Janne. Big round of applause. Go Finland.
Thank you.
Okay, great. So we're going to start with Randa. You are going to have some content come up and speak to it. So
yes.
Hopefully it will be yours and not somebody else's.
I'll just pass the mic.
And here we go.
Okay, great. Hi, everybody. Thank you for being here today. Transform is a startup in Seattle. It's about 4 years old. And what we've done is we've created what I like to call Netflix in a box. Okay, what does that mean? Well, what that means is if you're not Netflix, we are giving you the data capabilities that Netflix employs in order to be as successful as it has been. There's no question that it's made the greatest land grab in media in terms of audience in a very, very short time. If you recall, they started by, you know, just mailing videos and or DVDs, and look where they are today. So if you are a traditional media company, whether you're a broadcaster or you are a HBO or a network of any kind or you're a distributor, you really do need this sort of tool in your toolbox to help you compete. That's what we do. So next slide, please. So what we've done is created our media data platform. And what we look for is a different way to look at content. Netflix has been genius at creating over 28,000 different genres of the content. So it's not just dramedy and comedy. They're really looking at slicing and dicing very fine grain. Also, over 2,000 ways they describe a demographic. So if you start to apply that to content, and what we do, I'll show you on the next slide in a second, how we do this. We have created FICO scores for performance of content. So they're not actually FICO scores, but what they are is drawing power, staying power, etc. It's another way to look at your content, which ties together three things. It's the content itself, it's actual performance, whether that's downloads or that is linear ratings, and it's also audience engagement. When you marry those together, you have a very, very, very powerful tool to understand what is moving content and how to increase revenues and time spent with your content. So let's go to the next slide. We call this media data fusion, and what you're looking at are the three legs of the stool, if you will. The first one is video annotation to the nth degree. So we take content, we run it through our platform, and we add a great deal of data points to it. It's not things just like identifying whether or not there's a red car or somebody's wearing a blue shirt, but we look at moods and themes and storylines as they cross through seasons and episodes. We look at what's resonating character-wise, et cetera. We tie that into audience engagement, which is data that we collect, data that is germane to what we're looking for, tying in we monitor 300 million websites and all social so that we look at audience engagement in a very granular way. We have partnership with ComScore, which is where we're pulling in linear data. You tie all that in, that's performance. Last but not least, we then tie that to what our customer-owned data. So if it's an HBO, we're looking at Go and Now data. If it's a ABC, we're looking at ABC Player, et cetera. We tie all of this together to grow revenue. So those are the three legs of the stool and what we are doing as in toto.
Great. Thank you. Romain?
Yes.
You can bring up UTele content. And this moment could have been sponsored by someone, so just think about that in the future.
Yeah. Here we go. It's actually sponsored by UTele.
Excellent.
Content Discovery as a Service. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, please. The why of the company is really around what we've called television, which used to be simple, and now it's super complicated. We still call it TV here, but if you ask outside, half of the people will say they don't watch TV, but they do watch TV, just a different one. We think at UTele that it came from the natural evolution of the growing number of screens, the media being everywhere, the different kinds, and so on, and that has led to confusion for the end users, which when you leave a consumer in doubt about something, usually they walk away, they just try to make it work. So we decided to go after, you know, why and how to discover content in a certain way, matching what consumers want, as opposed to matching how it's been built to date. So we're challenging the organization of the data and they're challenging the delivery with a view that if we win the consumers and if everyone in the room wins the consumer, we'll win anyway. We may have to change a few things on the way, but so be it. Next slide, please. So the key essential asset is the metadata. We think that to create a platform for discovery, you need to have the right metadata, as exhaustive as possible, as rich as possible, on all the assets that you want to be discovered. So the first thing you will have to do is to build an aggregation layer, because often you will get good metadata from, you know, the big names on metadata, as well as maybe your own assets. But what's going to happen is you are going to want to match things against another, and you're going to get new sources of metadata, bring it together, and organize it for what we call information retrieval. Historically, the data has been organized for service, has shows. Shows are available at a certain point in time. That was linear television. Now we think that you have to think content first, and the way you watch it on iOS and Android at a time, appointment-led, linear, on-demand, is a second-order question. People want to watch stuff. So you have to organize the data to retrieve the information. Obviously, this is helping operators and our customers to build solutions on top of it. So you need business rules that match the constraints as well as the opportunity that they have. And then you need to deliver this back to the end users through a set of APIs, recommendation engines, search, promotions, and so on. All this is device agnostic. We also offer a solution for a white label, but I'm not going to talk about it today. Next, please. Now, the focus is AI. So obviously, in all the blocks that I described, AI comes and plays a part. When you aggregate data and you ingest, you have to find from one silo of data what is the matching asset. An example would be you take Netflix movie, where is that movie on Amazon? Where is it on linear television next week? So there's data matching going on, which implies document, what we call document similarity, when you try and find the things that look almost. Obviously, a human can find easily what they look like, but the machine has to do this at scale and in near real time. We also enrich the data. You know, knowing the title and the release year and the actors is all fine and well, but you may want to know other things like, you know, is it safe for children? What is the age rating in one country? How does it match to another country? Things like this. Adding new attributes. So you decorate the data, the original data, with more attributes, which will feed into the recommendations. And finally, on the delivery layer, discovery, we're talking about recommendations, and the Netflix of this world are the usual suspects, but also in the UI. So when you deliver, how do you morph the UI to the experience of the user? If I know that you are a sports fan, but you always watch sports late afternoon, this is the UI should be optimized for that information. But in the evening, and if you have children, and it's a Sunday, you may want to have a different experience, that kind of things. Finally, last slide, please. Delivery means sometimes apps. So we have a number of people who've used our technology and ourselves as well, which have recognized that it's worth some of their time and their money as well. On the client side, it's been used by set-top box companies that integrate the APIs to recommend content as well as mobile apps, as well as operators in the UK, Belgium, and the Norway. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Romain. Aman, and if you can bring up Zip Media.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for being here. And, you know, what I did was I had four slides, and I made one slide out of it so that Roman can have four slides. So Zip Media, Zip Media is an enterprise software company, and we help traditional media companies navigate the digital shift profitably. So the keyword is profitably. And we solve a variety of problems in the ecosystem. The biggest one being how do you solve for massive scale when you are when you're servicing tens of thousands of local advertisers. So our value proposition is that you work with us, and all the way from order management to business intelligence and ad activation, you can have one view of the whole platform, and you can have it in a very profitable manner. So the challenges that we solve from an ad activation standpoint is that you have a company, let's say Sinclair Broadcasting, who's our client, and they have 800 salespeople. How do you service 800 salespeople and tens of thousands of advertisers in a way that you don't need tens of thousands of humans to do it? And we use techniques from machine learning, artificial intelligence, from solving from all the way from business processes all the way down to ad targeting. So it's a fully integrated platform which uses various very, very fancy automated techniques, and we do that in a very profitable fashion. That's what we do in a nutshell, and I'm very excited to be on this panel and figure out how can content be more localized from an ad delivery perspective, and how can ad decision engines get that data so that it is personalized to the end user.
Great overview. And last but not least, Janne, if you can bring up the Beecaster content. Might even have some video here. So there we go.
Yeah. Beecaster is an AI-powered media platform for media content created by users. Beecaster's platform connects videos and photos to time and place. Content recorded by the user is easy to find without a need for hashtags and keywords. Our artificial intelligence automatically recognizes what the media includes. You can search for logos, faces, and even emotions. With Beecaster, you can create exceptional content from content flow created by users. At the same time, better activating customers at events is taken to the next level. Photographed content can be used in real time at events, social, and other media, as well as in stakeholder communications. Beecaster's technology can also be embedded into existing applications.
So what we are doing, we are collecting all that data for you, what these people are analyzing. So, but the data amount is so big what we are collecting, because people are filming a lot of their devices. Every single day they are taking 5.5 billion pictures or videos with their mobile devices. And all the most of the value is flowing to the third parties, like social media, big platforms. But we are the SDK and tools which are using AI to analyze that content and same time find that content for you, what you need in real time, and that you can use that content and find what you need. Everything is based on geolocation and time, and can be used in real time solutions like broadcasting or jumbo drones in events or social media messaging. And can be also resold. So that is what we are doing.
That's great, great. And thank you one and all for the presentations. We'll keep it there with you, Janne, for a second. So live content is really the premium content that everybody's looking at these days, whether it's a linear tier, or particularly an OTT. And how many of you paid for the Tiger Phil Mickelson showdown? Okay, a couple. Well, that was a lot of people were saying, well, sports hasn't met its match in OTT. I, I say that that's completely false. But in live content, particularly for what you're doing, Yanni, you're creating another content stream that, that is both separate and part of broadcast or OTT streams. How does your AI play in? Because if you can talk a little bit about some of the different pieces of the AI that Becaster uses.
Yeah. So we have 8 different parts AI. We can find all the objects, emotions. We can find 6,000 celebrities at this point. Also, we are running our pipeline is there's only the quality, so we can measure the quality of the content, all the blurriness, shaking, white balance, color balance, all the technical things in the content. So we make the mobile feeds and the content what people are filming with the mobile devices really easy to use, and you can set the thresholds where you want and what kind of content you want to find and what you want to use and so on.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, personalization is something that gets talked a lot about with AI and machine learning. But Roman, you've kind of really touched on a bit of a holy grail, which is really identifying content across different streams for personalization, some of which you talked about here. But how did you come to bring AI to this problem, which people have really been trying to solve for decades, frankly?
Well, when we looked at the problem, it kind of struck us that it was very similar to other problems in different industries. If you take e-commerce, which has product recommendations, comparison of products, travel, music as well, you always have the same challenges, which is there are massive amounts of content that can be watched. You know very little about a user, and you need to order that list of things that they could be watching. When you go back to the first principles, you have to first, A, get great representation of the things that you want to surface and get the same one across services. So this is the aggregation part. And in that one, like I said, we've used document similarity and NLP to find if a show is described on service X by, you know, a synopsis and service Y by a slightly shorter, different tone of voice that may have been rewritten. How do you match this? So NLP is an important topic, but often NLP will give you, so natural language processing will be a problem because if you go across countries, so one of our clients is in Belgium. In Belgium, you have Dutch Flemish version, you have English, and you may have French as well. So imagine you have a show that is in 3 different catalogs, and in each language, how do you find it's the same show? So we had to come up with clever methods. One of them involves image matching because irrespective of the language, obviously, some pack shots or posters will be more easily recognizable across different pools. So you do image analysis and you use that to create new, more textual structured data, which then looks like, again, right, NLP stuff.
And does that play into e-commerce for any of your clients as well? You know?
Yeah, so it's interesting because we had earlier discussions today about how does the ETT outgrow the vehicle, the mobile app, and things that we've been asked to look into is how do you connect the digital world to the physical world? So we made a matching engine almost for fun, to be honest.
But, right.
It was a client who asked that says, you know, could you find the related merchandise that's on Amazon for this particular digital asset? So now we have an API that effectively says, give me a show and I'll tell you anything you can buy that is physical, not digital, on Amazon. So this kind of matching involves, again, another fuzziness, purpose, and domain expertise, because the challenge is one recommendation engine or matching engine would work very well for matching shoes once against another, but won't work for videos.
Right.
Here's the same. You're matching a video to, you know, a T-shirt on Amazon. How do you do this?
Yes, this was the old Jennifer Aniston sweater thing back in the late 90s when IPTV was supposed to be a thing in the U.S., but never was. In fact, Belgium, we had a client, Spot, maybe you know them, they're a spin-out from University of Aalst, who's the closest to doing that kind of on-screen matching, which is great for OTT. And speaking of e-commerce and ads, we're going to talk to the one ad guy on the panel. That's Aman. You know, it's interesting because you're touching really a lot of local. And Sinclair, of course, is both a client and an investor. And they've tried to do certain things around this, like Burst, a Boston-based startup, for those who don't know. But you have a really interesting approach to this that really gets into the scalability. Talk about how you're different than what most of this audience might know in terms of addressable TV and automated programming.
Sure. So, you know, if you think of digital advertising, so let's talk about OTT, for example. Now, you know, it's very easy to run a national campaign, right? When I say very easy, as in you have millions of dollars to spend, and there's lots of chances, you know, the error rate could be high, but it kind of gets masked in the millions of dollars.
We'll fix it in the mix, yeah.
Sure, you know, we'll fix it somewhere. But now when you're talking about a local advertiser who has $1,000 to spend, how do you then do it properly by seeding it correctly? And how do you do it for repetitively for tens of thousands of advertisers, right? So it starts not from the, you know, ad execution part, but it starts way, way before that. It starts at the inception of the sale. How do you take all the unstructured data that the salesperson has given us, and how do you then structure it into a media plan, which has to be created very, very fast, and it has to be relevant to the advertiser, right, in some way, shape, or form. So we use a lot of machine learning to solve those problems, to do recommendations to the, you know, to our clients, which are the sellers of this advertising, right? Or OTT is just one form of it. But imagine if you were to do a local, you know, very specific cross-media, right, you know, plan.
So this would be like, instead of three billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri, it'd be three AI stacks out of St. Louis, right? Yeah, something like that.
Sure. Yeah. So you know,
just trying to get the customer right.
So that's, you know, that's one challenge, right? So how do you solve that challenge? Now, campaign is sold, then what, right? How do you then take a media plan which was sold and then translate into, you know, our platform, potentially other platforms, because we act as an activation engine for many, many, many vendors for media companies. Mm-hmm. How do you do that with just pressing a button and not actually humans going in and doing
right,
that?
Right, that level of automation.
There's a lot of automation
trust
that goes into it, right? And my CTO, who is sitting right there, not paying attention, mm-hmm, you know, he has a bunch of data.
By the way, his name is Raman, so it is the Aman and Raman show at Zip Media. Yeah, yeah. That's him. Yeah. Go ahead.
So you know, we used, you know, the way we do things is first, we did not have this data, right? So we actually humanly created all this data over a long period of time. And then mm-hmm, we ran models, algorithms on top of it. And now we are at a place where it's good enough that it can translate unstructured data from a media plan, which we have actually already structured in a little way. And then
so,
it changes.
So for those who want news here, Zip Media is creating their own content studio, right? Is that it? Yeah?
No.
No. Okay. I'm putting words in your mouth. Yeah.
No. So then, you know, then it starts running. And then, you know, after that, it's more of an online advertising kind of optimization process, which has been solved. You know, we are not trying to solve it. We are using the same techniques. So that, you know, that's a scale of problems we are trying to solve. And it has enabled us to service more than 20,000 advertisers who have created, you know, 100,000 plus campaigns. And then, you know, you multiply that by 10. So that's a level of scale we are dealing with. And we're doing it with, you know, only 70 people on our team. So, you know, that's what we are able
but
to solve.
You know, it seems like you're solving a problem that has bedeviled a lot of people in OTT. You know, particularly, you know, seeing the same damn ad, you know, 1,000 times. And not an ad you want to see either, you know, the local dentist
or
something.
You know, I was talking to Roman before this panel. So what I was saying was, you know, if you think of national advertisers, right, you know, and you watch some OTT thing and you see the same ad, but I think local advertisers bring that localization flavor to the content, which a lot of actually content providers like. So that's, you know, that's what we bring to the table. But the next level of personalization would be, how can we tailor actually the ad content at the local level to the content itself? And those signals are still not being passed to us. So the ingredients of making the content, which audience it's for, you know, we don't get that information. We know which user is seeing it,
right,
but we don't know what the content is. So we were talking about how can we pass that information to the ad decisioning system so that, you know, there's uber personalization of all this and localization.
Right. Well, and that would probably be the next level. But, you know, Randa, you are working with ComScore for local news intelligence. That's the program, right? So talk about that in terms of how AI helps solve problems for local.
What we are doing is looking at show flow, looking at segments, placement of those segments, the content of the segments. Are they local? Is it a local story? Is it a national story? Is it in studio? Is it on location? Is it anchor read? Where all of the elements that go into local news. What we are doing is helping them increase their audiences. We're looking at what kinds of ads they should place in and around breaks so they mitigate the loss of ratings during breaks. We're looking at all of the performance of the news and helping stations start to understand what are those levers that are moving it. What I hope, or what I really want to get out of this, is having stations know what really resonates in their communities, and then allowing them that freedom to start integrating more of that kind of content into their newscasts. And a case in point would be when I was on the station side, huge argument with a new news director and a general manager, and the news director said, research shows that dogs are just, everyone loves dogs here, and we need more dog stories, anything about dogs. That's going to grow audience. I want to be number one. And station manager says, absolutely not. No, we do news.
We're a cat station, yeah.
We do news. But if you could, if you know that if you can add just 10% more stories that resonate in, with an audience in your marketplace, and it's a fact instead of a hunch or research that isn't actually tried and true, then you've got more opportunity inside your marketplace. If you know that a story is going to really resonate, you can also share that across the group.
So this gets into the issue of insight versus just raw information.
Exactly.
So talk about that, because, of course, there's a level of automation there, but we're really looking at, I mean, there's a joke in the TV production industry that producers are always just waiting for the damn car company to basically put the show on the air. You know, let's get the check from General Motors or, well, maybe not General Motors this week, but, you know, you get the picture. So you talked about the red car analogy earlier. I mean, it seems like you are solving something that has been a very old problem in TV, the TV business, about that kind of captured insight as opposed to just gobs of raw information.
Yes. Insight comes from being a subject matter expert. You have to have that. It's not just build it and automate it. We know of a competitor of ours who did go into a station. I'm going to tell them the story because they don't know it.
Yeah.
And, you know, came out with a recommendation that news stories needed to really have more red kayaks in them. Well, that's not helpful. We look at the concept. We don't just look at objects. If you just look at objects, you're going to come up with conclusions like that. And that's not very actionable. We look for actionable insight for stations, something that's meaningful to say, okay, what you need to do is put weather at this block and this location in front of the courthouse does not work in your marketplace. Reduce that, increase this. We also look at audience engagement in a very meaningful way. Who are the top five anchors and reporters that day in terms of engagement? Sometimes we have had some people find that they had a new anchor, they didn't know how that person was working, and you can see it. We can go back 10 years and measure impact in engagement for stations. So you can see a trajectory of a career. And when we look at shows, when we're looking at season after season after season, we see definite markers of what shows are going to be successful after just two or three episodes. Because it's the engagement part is the correlations between engagement, what chatter, if you will, what people are talking about and what they're watching is in the high 90 percentile. So if you know that, then you start to be able to use this for green lighting, for renewing contracts, et cetera. It's a very powerful tool.
Yeah, this is a question for everyone on the panel. What are you looking at in terms of the value and efficiency for AI and machine learning? How does that play into, you know, efficiencies and scale for solving problems?
Well, I can tell you that in our space where you take metadata from multiple parties, you bring it together, and every time you find a problem and you go back to the party who gave it to you, they tell you, oh yeah, don't worry, it will be fixed in 3 days because somebody's going to go and, you know, tweak it, and then it propagates through the CMS, and then you get it in your API on your server. Well, when that's a mistake such as, okay, maybe there was a double space, that's fine. When it's a live event and you get the wrong cast or the wrong synopsis and the event is now in the past,
right,
that's not good enough.
Right.
So I think, you know, AI applied to deliver automation, to deliver scalability and near real-time. I don't think you need to go to real-time, but if your schedule changes every hour, if you can detect something and propagate it through the entire platform within a minute, it's mm-hmm. largely good enough. That's the kind of stuff that we get out of automation. You know, we're eight people
right.
doing, you know, massive work because actually the machine is doing the work. You
yeah.
put the IP
yeah.
and then you harvest.
We're 12 people.
or 12, yeah. Or if, go ahead.
You know, what I would say is, we are 70 people, but it should have been 7,000 people. So I think that's the type of scale that AI has helped us solve, right? I mean, it's no joke to run.
And it's important to note that 25 years ago, you would have been talking about a 5,000 to 7,000 person company.
Exactly. Right. So I think AI has really helped. I mean, AI, I use AI as a very blanket term, but, you know, machine learning, statistics, data, right? It has really helped us. You know, we actually track cost per action, and our cost per action used to be astronomical, and it's going, it's in the, you know, high, I would say, teens now, right? Which is interesting, because it used to be like thousands of dollars. So I think, and you know, Raman's one of the goals he has is I have a max ceiling on headcount on ad operations, right? Which are the people who are translating this unstructured data sometimes when the machines cannot do it. So we need to keep making it better and better and better, and, you know, reduce kind of the hiring of the future, right? So I would rather give machines more leverage and Raman more resources so that I don't have to hire 10 more people in the future.
Yeah, it's interesting. Now, Yanni, I mean, you have a small team. I mean, it's probably about 30 people now, but they're all, you know, if they're not PhD level, they're very high level. So what do you look at in terms of scalability and efficiency?
Yeah, and that is one thing, because you have so much data, so much media content. You have to find the valuable parts, and that is one thing. And the second thing is the speed. Everybody said it's important, because you can't manually find that content so fast that machine can. And the third thing, what I have is that it's like a now I lost my thought, but the third thing what I was meeting was you have a, when machine is doing that, it's doing that always same. When the people are doing the hashtags describing the media content, they are always using different keywords. When the language changes, when the culture changes, different people see different things in the same picture, in the same video. Different people are interested in different things. And when we learn our machine to find that content what we really need, the machine is always right, and it doesn't make the mistakes. So, and it's almost real time, like you said. So you can use that content.
You're solving some cataloging issues.
Yeah. A lot of, right. We make that content what people are producing, we made that findable. You can find that in real time and use that.
That's an excellent point. Gets back to what both Aman and actually Ramona were talking about in terms of the number of people, because you're doing some pre-processing that might even play into post-production. Randa, is it getting easier to sell the concept of this to people in the local world, what you're doing?
I think it's getting easier to sell everywhere.
Everywhere.
I think it was early to market. To give you an idea of kind of the scale of what we're trying to do and how I think it is so valuable, again, I'm going back to Netflix, sorry. 93% of the shows they produce are successful. If you look at the typical content creator, all the networks out there, their average is somewhere between 40, maybe 50%. If we can tip the balance for you in just, you know, reducing the amount of production you have to do to get to a successful show, that's very, very meaningful in terms of the bottom line.
Well, I mean, that's huge, because, again, you're looking at this from a programming standpoint as well. Something that would have taken, going back to what Aman was saying, you know, many hundreds of Deloitte people years ago doing something like that. So that's pretty huge. But, you know, we're looking at, I think, part of what we're talking about is also matching content with audiences. So how do all of you look at AI and ML doing that without either getting too deep into privacy issues, which I think you've solved pretty well? But, you know, talk about that, because I think it is a key thing to discuss here.
Yeah, so I think one of the challenges that exist in that typical journey when somebody encounters an OTT product and content is that you usually have a cold start issue for that user, is you know very little about this user. Unless you're as a content owner, you say, I have a history of dealing with you as a customer for years and years, and now I'm launching this new product. I might know stuff about you, but if I don't, then I have to do still some recommendation and discovery. So you'll need to find a way to do it, which is typically, you know, content-based, and you say, this thing looks like this, tell me a few things you like, and then so on. Then you start to acquire the data. On the back of this, your behavior is going to tell me what, as an individual, you are doing and you like. And this is where you create a pool of data that you're going to mine, and you're going to start to say, this person looks like this other person.
Right.
And that's all fine and well, but again, I think the next layer is when you start to have enough data, so it's scalability at the beginning, which qualifies for this third layer. It is to start to cluster people into groups and then create audiences. And then this is where probably the entire stack connects to each other. But you say, if I know who you are on a OTT service, mm-hmm. when you are a customer of this other, you know, news network, if I pass on details, and we have to find ways to replicate the cookie that used to exist that can't exist
that's
anymore
right.
across devices on TV and so on, and that's a different space. But once you do this, then you can start to feed the different systems with attributes of your taste, your behavior in this context, and get local advertising, get these guys to do the same.
Yeah, that's huge.
You know, I'll add to that. So, you know, targeting on OTT, other than, you know, publisher targeting and whatnot, is, I call it a magic trick at this point, because it is indeed a magic
trick. It's like a moving target, yeah.
Yeah. So if you think of the universal identifier that exists in the OTT world, it is IP address, right? Okay, you can layer on some sort of data on top of IP address. A lot of companies do that, and I'm sure they are great at it. But then there's a other half of the publisher ecosystem that does not like to share IP address. What happens then? You know, how do you get the audience data? And I feel that in those cases, you know, let's go back to just, you know, Google AdWords and just contextual targeting, right? How do we then get metadata on the content passed on at the time of ad decisioning so that then we can, you know, use some sort of techniques that already exist out there and do a more personalized ad serving, right? So that's where I would go with this.
Yeah, this is, and Yane, I mean, you're in an interesting domain because, of course, so much of what you're dealing with is mobile content. And again, that's there's been a lot of energy around single source, multi-platform data collection for mobile. But the idea of having this kind of geolocation-based real-time content, I think you could get very, very attractive interests from people who want to sell in the minute or millisecond, if you will, right?
Yeah. Yeah, when you are filming something newsworthy, the time is money. And if you can sell that faster, you can get more money. So that is one reason why we used AI. And how we solve these privacy issues, the answer is that we give also the benefits for that speed and these data for the user themselves. So we are not just take that data and sell that to the Russians or and we are giving the benefit and the data what is going through the pipeline and engine, we are giving that data really, really nice back to the people, and they can use that their own data and choose can want they that sold or
right.
not.
Because you know, in that context, we're getting into a conversation, which will be the last part of this discussion, is around contextual content. I think we've now seen a maturation of stacks and platforms and AI and ML and NLP that really help identify content in that kind of contextual way, as Roman and Aman, you were talking about that kind of targeting in the moment. But Randa, I mean, you're dealing with this as well, and also from a producer, you know, point of view as well, right?
Yes. I mean, in the OTT world, what we are doing for customers is really helping them, you know, serve more of their content to their existing folks, and then also identifying for them the audiences that they're missing. So if you are the person in charge of, you know, the OTT side of a business, and you know you've got your micro-targeting audiences, and you know what content to serve them up next instead of guessing or universally just serving up the same thing, you get to optimize your library. Optimizing your library more efficiently is also money in your pocket. So everything we do is geared toward that: get more subscribers, have more people spend more time with your content.
Yeah, I mean, this also gets to, you know, the whole concept of adding, you know, different pieces to the what you're already doing. I mean, we get a lot of attention around voice search and conversational content as well. Are any of you getting involved in that? I think, Roman, you probably have done a little
more.
Yeah,
we've done some work on that in the early days of Alexa. And it's actually interesting because Alexa has really commoditized the voice-to-text layer. So it's really not a problem Even me, it understands me. Just Siri doesn't.
Siri doesn't.
Doesn't think I speak English.
Siri is a little too white bread. Yeah.
And I think all you guys do.
Yeah.
If you don't understand, you just say it.
Yeah.
So speech to text is quite simple. It's a trivial-ish thing done. It's commoditized. It's available as an API. You do with it.
Right.
Then where it all falls apart, at least from what we've done and tried and tested, is what happens next. You pass on that information to a service layer, recommendation, search, and so on. So if you don't do that well enough, which is actually in the case of Alexa's context, you're going to look stupid pretty consistently. Yeah. You know, you were saying the machine gets it right all the time, well, and predictably right. Well, actually, with Alexa, you can get it predictably wrong all the time as well. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty clear. It just doesn't, it has short-lived memory.
Right.
So you can't say, do this. No, actually, not this movie, but the next one. Because the thing we forget when we think about voice interfaces is it's hard to have a conversation where the answer to the next question is a list of choices.
Right.
Right? It's super hard. When you say, give me a good movie from 2016, well, that's probably 150. So am I going to talk to Alexa saying, not this one, no, not this one, no, that doesn't work. So you have to revisit the experience, but the technology has to support the experience. And today, I think, I would say Google is doing a really good job there because they control the entire ecosystem. Alexa has made a choice to say, I'm going to give a toolbox to everybody. Awesome, and thank you. But it's breaking apart when you start to want to have conversations and follow through. And what happened an hour ago? Because you just don't know anymore.
No.
So that's still to be, I think, cracked.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, and that gets to a question for all of you about Amazon. Amazon's recognition is a good platform. Google AI is decent. IBM Watson, decent. But, you know, there are some pieces of this that are better than others. Recognition has gotten some good and bad PR for facial detection. How are each of you dealing with those sorts of issues in terms of people who are looking at compliance or privacy issues? I mean, Jani, you're dealing with compliance issues, right?
Yeah. How we are doing that? We are combining different types of AI to fix these kind of issues. So there is something is better in different library, different environment. So we can use our code to combine these and find the best parts. And also we can use the audio recognition for the different things than the advertising. So usually different platforms are using the voice recognition to the show the right adverts, but we are using that voice for doing the right analysis. So so it's helping.
It's interesting. I think we're going to cut to a few questions. Do we have anyone out there who's got a question? Simon Applebaum, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, thank you very much. And for those who don't know me, I'm the producer and host of Tomorrow Will Be Televised, the program all about television on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and the IR Radio Podcast Network, also right from Media Village. And I'm one of your agent provocateurs here at TVOT, along with Clayton Banks of Silicon Harlem, who is also in the audience, other folks. And I'm happy that you came around to the subject I wanted to get into, because I think it's the most important one of the day when it comes to artificial intelligence, and that is voice features in the television set. We now have critical mass with smart TV sets and smart devices. In case you don't know, according to the latest research, 2/3 to 3/4 of all U.S. households have them. 8 billion content hours were used by those folks, according to this past September, according to Nielsen. But more importantly, a fast-growing number of these TV sets and devices, whether it's from Samsung or Vizio or Amazon Fire, etc., now have artificial voice in them. Whether it's Google Assistant. By the way, take a poll. How many of you have smart TV sets or smart TV devices? Raise your hands. How many of you have a smart set of device which allows you to control the set with your voice? Very interesting. That's how fast growing it's going. And there are some people who now believe and are making bets that this may be the trigger to finally launching what a lot of people have predicted for decades, including here at this show, which is the era of interactive television, the era of interactive advertising, the era of interactive retailing. What do you folks think?
So the question is are we there yet? I'll synthesize it. In terms of the vision of what interactive TV was supposed to be 25 to 30 years ago, do we think that machine learning and AI has brought us to that level of interactivity? I'm not going to comment. I'll let you comment.
I think we're getting there. We're not there yet. I think that the ideal is going to be realized probably more quickly by Alexa, simply because it will recognize what's on my TV, and I will say, Alexa, can I get that sweater? Amazon sells that sweater. It's $42.95. Would you like me to purchase it? Yes, thank you. Done. You know, that's where I think we all want to go. But we're not there yet.
You know, I think that goes into all the privacy and data collection and all those issues, I think, what you guys just talked about. So I feel that we are far away from it, honestly, because will the watchdogs allow this to happen? Am I going to allow Alexa to scan my content all the
time?
But
if the open mic is there and you're talking about survival gear, and then you come back a week after being on the road and you're served up, you know, all sorts of ads from tent-making companies or red kayak companies. I mean, that's an issue that people have had to learn with that open mic, you know?
I agree, and I think that's also, I think, a problem in
right.
at least our ecosystem, right?
You think we're a little further out then?
I think we are, because I think everybody has to partake in this whole thing, right?
It's a good point, right? The level of participation.
Yeah, so if it's only two or three people doing it, then it's not going to work. It's just going to fail. So unless there's critical mass, I don't think this is going to succeed.
What do you think, Romain?
Yeah, I think there's been some good progress. I described it on voice recognition and the platform play. The challenges I see are that actually we need to still do some work on what, you know, Alexa calls or Amazon calls voice UIs, because the user interface that we cracked very well on mobile are very similar to what we knew when it was on desktop. If you think about it, it's a visual interaction. You use your hands and your eyes coordination to do this. Now, voice is a new world. We interact with humans with voice, but with machines, we've never done it. So all the mistakes I've seen so far are saying, oh, it's got to work. What I'll do is I'll just put voice instead of using a mouse and a pointer, and it should just work. It just doesn't work. So there's some work that needs to be done on how you remodel the interaction. I think that's number one. Number two is the ecosystem. You get Alexa, who hears your voice, calls a server that says, oh, you probably know what I have, so tell me a movie that is like this, like that. And then you need to talk to sometimes a Samsung, sometimes an LG, sometimes a Roku box, sometimes, and none of them talk the same language. So you're still back to, you know, where does it break is interoperability of those services.
Yeah. So we're getting close, but not as close as we might be. But that's all the time we have. So I'm Chris Paff. Please give it up for Randa Mikara from Transform. Romain Oud from Utelli. Aman Serene from Zip Media. And Janet Nuvenin from Bcaster. Thanks again, everyone. And next year, we will do this as an automated podcast.